forward. Let me remind everybody to have you turn your cell phones off, please. It's kind of embarrassing when it goes off in the middle of a presentation. Today is Tuesday, February 17th, my mother's 90th birthday. And fisheries will please come to order at 10:02. Representative Ortiz and myself. Uh-oh. Would that be you, Vince? Representative Ortiz and myself, Chair Louise Stutz, excused are Representative Johnson, Millette, Christ Tompkins, and Heron. We also have Christy Blair from the House Records, John Shermer from the LIO, and of course, my one and only Fisheries Committee person, Reed Harris, who is right behind you. Today we're going to have a presentation by the Alaska Maritime Workforce and Development Plan, and I'm pretty excited about this. It should be pretty interesting. The presenters are Chris Norris from Icicle Seafoods, Julie Decker from Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, Doug Ward, Vigor Incorporated, Matt Allward, Homer Marine Trade Association, and Paula Cullenberg from Alaska Sea Grant. So, please begin your presentation and state your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Chris Norris. I do government affairs for Icicle Seafoods. Thank you, Chairman Stutz and Representative Ortiz, for being here today. We wanted to present the Alaska Maritime Workforce Development Plan to you, and I'd like to start out by saying that Alaska is a maritime state, and when we say maritime industry, we mean both onshore and offshore activities that employ people engaged in such things as seafood harvesting, processing, and sport charter businesses, fisheries research, management, and enhancement, marine transportation, and the marine support industries serving ship and boat design, construction, and repair, as well as stevedoring and longshoring. Maritime is a complex and global industry engaging both large and small businesses and agencies that can be unaware of each other's value to their enterprise. What is the value of this industry? Well, I'm afraid to say I don't have an exact number. What I do know, coming from the seafood industry, is that our sector alone contributes over $6 billion each year in total impact to the state of Alaska. Therefore, we can only conclude that the contribution of the entire maritime industry is even much higher. Alaska's economy is also highly reliant on marine transportation and services. Pretty much all of our food and household goods comes north by container ship, while our major exports of crude oil and seafood products travel south on these same ships. Jobs in the seafood, marine transportation, and other maritime sectors form the economic backbone of many Alaska communities. The state's marine highway system operates ferries that are integral to the livelihood of all of our coastal communities, moving both people and goods all over the state. Both native and non-native Alaskans depend strongly on the marine environment for food and recreation, and certainly subsistence harvest is a unique part of our Alaska economy and culture. Occupations in the maritime industry range from the professional in the office to the skilled trade jobs found on the ground and on the water. These jobs can be found in every community along Alaska's rivers and coastline, including Anchorage. These businesses range from large employers such as the Department of Fish and Game and seafood processors to thousands of small proprietorships, including fishermen, marine fabricators, and other marine support operations. Until now, these occupations have not been characterized as a unique and related workforce. Collectively, the maritime industry is the largest private employer in Alaska with over 68,000 workers with over 500 firms. Here's some examples of the size of the different sectors of the workforce. You can see we've got commercial fishing, sport fish guiding, water transportation, boat building and repair, marine engineering, as well as numerous jobs with different agencies, both federal and state. I recall during Governor Walker's State of the State address, he talking about putting Alaskans to work in career occupations being a high priority for his administration. Resident hire in some sectors of the maritime economy is high, reflecting localized demographics, while other sectors and areas struggle to find adequate numbers of Alaskans wanting to or qualified to perform the work required. The goal of this Maritime Workforce Development Plan is to connect businesses operating in Alaska with resident Alaskans who are skilled, knowledgeable, and desire careers in rewarding and challenging occupations. Currently, marine career opportunities abound in Alaska. The Arctic is a maritime environment that is commanding more focus daily. And the recently released report by McDowell Group, Ties That Bind, described the value of all the goods and services exported from Puget Sound coming to Alaska. These Alaska imports represent our opportunity to both diversify and strengthen our economy through value-added activities currently performed in the lower 48. So to identify high-value careers available to Alaska residents, a private-public partnership was formed to create the Alaska Maritime Workforce Development Plan, an 18-month effort that engaged hundreds of Alaskans in defining the needs and priorities to develop a globally collective maritime workforce. The goals of this plan are to develop a responsive workforce that keeps the maritime industry and economy strong, to guide Alaska's workforce to discover and prepare for these jobs, and to increase the number of Alaskans in skilled maritime occupations. The plan has been created with the guidance from industry and the University of Alaska and many others. The task at hand now is to identify and develop the best workforce development and investment practices to create a resilient workforce capable of competing in a global economy. The members of the Industry Advisory Committee are committing time and resource to accomplish this task. And you can see by the list up there that we cover a wide range of the sectors within this industry. Elected officials, five state agencies, the University of Alaska, and the Rasmussen Foundation have also provided support for this plan. The university has allocated legislatively-directed TVAP funds to this effort and many, many hours of staff time. With support from industry, countless hours have been dedicated to creation of this plan. An even greater effort is going to be required to implement it, and with fewer resources available. As public resources decline, today's tumultuous economy is driving advances in technology and production, requiring an adaptive and informed workforce and workforce investment system for Alaska to be competitive. The challenge to defining and preparing Alaska's maritime workforce is represented by the complexity implied by this chart. It's only an overview, and it's not put up there with the expectation that you can read it all, but rather to illustrate that it's not necessarily a linear progression as you go on a career path in the maritime industry, but rather a web of cross-cutting skills that allows you to go in many different directions. The skills, knowledge, and abilities required to successfully perform in the maritime work world can be transferred across the spectrum of Alaska resource and energy-based industries. An enduring workforce investment system must cut across economic, geographic, jurisdictional, seasonal, and cultural boundaries to respond to Alaska's diverse and demanding workplace. I'm going to turn the mic over to my colleague, Julie Decker.
Thank you. Julie Decker. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. So let me see here. There we go. It's so easy, I can't figure it out. So in the development of this workforce development plan, we went to each of the subsectors within the maritime industry and conducted surveys and identifying the high demand, high priority occupations. In other words, areas where there is a need today to fill workers in positions. And so our subsectors included seafood harvesting, and the priority occupations identified there were seafood harvesters, which included both permit holders and crew members, vessel repair and maintenance service providers, and this was an interesting area that was identified. I don't think that everyone would have thought about it at the beginning of the survey, but fishermen basically said, we need these support services in order to keep our boats running and keep us on the water. So they're very much a priority occupation for us. And also, a lot of fishermen actually participate, are workers in this industry in the off-season. So there's a lot of overlap. Another area was shellfish farmers, who there's not a high need today for this job, but there are a potential for high growth in the future. The next subsector is our seafood processing subsector, and they identified 9 priority occupations. And you can see some of these are specific to seafood processors, but many of them have overlaps with other industries as well. The other another subsector that we identified within the broader maritime sector is what we call research, enhancement, and management. This subsector we included because we understand it is vitally important to our seafood industry. In order to have fisheries, to be able to go fishing, we have to have managers and we have to have research, and enhancement has become a huge component of that as well. So this subsector identified, I think it's 7 priority occupations here as well. And as you can see, the priority occupations that we've listed so far are more highly trained, year-round positions. And these were another key for the industry when we were targeting what are our highest occupations. We looked at actually a wide range of criteria, and one of them was the highly trained, higher-paid, year-round jobs in our communities. The last subsector is what we call marine occupations and support industries, and there were 3 high priority occupations identified, and it's almost like groups of occupations actually, but shipbuilding, vessel operations, which include deckhand, vessel engineer, and captains, and vessel repair and maintenance service providers. Again, that shows up again in the other subsector. So you can see a lot of crossover. Now, how do we get from where we are to our final goal, which is employing more Alaskans in these in the maritime industry and in these high-priority occupations? We determined that there were 5 overall strategies. And many of these, I'm going to quickly go through the overall strategies. It's not to say that they're not important, but a lot of that information is within the full plan. And in fact, I think what's interesting here to note is a lot of these overall strategies are also employed in the other industries that have workforce development plans, such as oil and gas, healthcare, mining. So one of the first overall strategies is to grow awareness of maritime occupations and develop career pathways. And this is doing work not only in our school system, but also within areas where there might be folks that have the skills that may be interested in maritime industry, but they don't know of the interest yet. So, for instance, one of the key groups identified was veterans. Alaska has a high percentage of veterans, and they have many times the skills needed for these maritime jobs, so they might be a very good group of people to target. Improve workforce readiness. That's another one of our overall strategies. It's important for all of the industries, and things like soft skills came up many times with the employers that were sitting at the table developing this plan. Once we know the priority occupations, training, providing training for Alaskans for these occupations is important, of course. And this is where working with our education system, our university, our AvTech, you know, our career and technical training organizations is very important. And by the way, I just wanted to say the governor has declared the month of February Career and Technical Education Awareness Month. So I thought that was very good to bring up and remind folks of. Supporting recruitment and retention is another overall strategy, and again, it's very common to the other workforce development plans that already exist. This overall strategy of promoting sustained industry engagement is important because, and as Doug Ward likes to talk about, there are some best practices that have been identified in a national level, and one of those is that workforce development activities are most effective when the industry is sitting at the table and engaged. In other words, saying, this is what our needs are. You may have a program in place, an educational program in place, but it's not turning out the exact kind of worker you need, or those types of examples where industry can engage and say, you know, we need something tweaked, or we need this type of worker. But the point is, you have to have industry engaged in order to have that kind of good feedback and alignment between your programs and the needs out there in the companies and the communities. So how to promote and sustain industry engagement has been a theme for this industry advisory committee, and it's something we're continuing to work on and talk about a structure for how to move that forward long term. The university has been kind enough to help us, the industry advisory committee, provide support to our efforts, but we're looking at, the industry now is looking at a way to, moving forward, how can we continue that long term within our own sort of organizations or structures that we already have. So implementing the plan, we have a couple of examples that we wanted to talk about. I'll start off, and then we'll hand the mic over to some folks in the room that that can expand on what they're doing either locally or regionally. Again, my organization, Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, one thing we're doing is exploring the idea of helping to create this new structure for the statewide industry input as this workforce development plan rolls out and we continue to implement it. Another thing, I live in Wrangell, and I'm on the Wrangell Assembly. And in Wrangell, we have a Marine Service Center, so a boat haul-out with two boat haul-outs. And the state was generous enough over the last 5 or 10 years to help build a really good infrastructure there. And what we're doing in Wrangell now to help build that out is work with the Economic Development Committee and staff, the high school shop teacher, and the Marine Service Center businesses to identify what the business's needs are as far as workforce development and help make those happen in conjunction with the high school shop teacher. And there's some really excellent things that coming out of that simple collaboration on a local level. For instance, the high school shop teacher was able to purchase and get up and running some high-tech equipment. So using computers to basically cut pieces for the shipyard that the businesses in the community are actually purchasing from the high school shop class. So some really cool, innovative things happening on a very small scale. But what we're also trying to do is link these small local efforts to regional efforts, scale them up to regional efforts, and then also look statewide at how we can work together statewide. So it's not as easy as saying it, but that's our goal, and our challenge is to knit these coastal communities to a larger efforts regionally and larger efforts statewide. So Chris, did you have any other examples?
Yeah, I guess I would just add that since the plan's come out, we've increased some training opportunities in quality control, ammonia refrigeration. We're looking at doing that with vessel repair. We've continued to have the Industry Advisory Committee meet. We've got work groups that are working on some of the priority occupations. We have a Tier 1 grant application that the University of Alaska has put in for with the Rasmussen Foundation to create some videos for use in the high schools about career awareness. And we also have Doug Ward from Vigor and Matt Allward from Homer to talk about some of the programs that are going on in their communities.
Madam.
Please.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Question, I think, for Chris. Going back to one of your first slides, you talked about, it mentions to what level maritime workforce, makes up, how much of the economy or how much of the job sector that is covered by maritime workforce. Did you give me, did you state a statistic, like a percentage of workers, Alaskan workers overall, are a part of the maritime workforce?
I believe I said there are 68,000 jobs attributed to the maritime sector.
Okay. That's a significant part of the economy, for sure, a significant part of the workforce, no doubt. Now, more specifically, you're talking about development of the workforce and your programs to do that. And I'm familiar, of course, with being from Southern Southeast, what's going on in Ketchikan, what's going on in Wrangell. Do you feel like, at least coastally across the state, there's this effort that's being felt everywhere, or is it pretty much limited to some specific communities in terms of workforce development and awareness of it and those kinds of things?
Through the chair, and forgive me for not doing that earlier, Representative Ortiz, I think that we've got some real specific examples that are going on in different communities, but I think there's a lot of things going on in terms of our regional training centers, our University of Alaska campuses, and some of the high schools. And part of it is just becoming aware of what each other is doing and trying to get everybody collaborating, working in alignment, so we're all pulling in the same direction, and that we're not having duplicative and inefficiencies within the system. If we all can get in alignment with the plan, then we can figure out what the best practices are and use those systems in other parts of the state and hopefully reach our goals faster. You know, with declining revenues, we realize we're not going to get new monies to implement this, so we've got to work smarter. And one way to do that is for everybody to get behind a plan.
Can I follow up?
Sure,
thank you. And along that same line, I come from the field of education, public schools, high schools. Do you feel like, I think Julie mentioned, she used the phrase simple collaboration at the local level. And I know that sometimes it's not so simple to get yourselves connected and integrated into the public school system. Has there generally been an openness there and pretty easy to find pathways into the different communities and the different education school districts around the coastal areas anyway?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's a hard thing to answer. As Julie said, this month is CTE, Career Technical Education. And I think what we found in some areas, and I think that Matt Allward in particular can speak to this, is that there's a lot of emphasis on getting kids to four-year degree programs. But we have a lot of jobs in Alaska that aren't geared to four-year college degree jobs. We have a wide variety, and a lot of those take some real hands-on skills that you can't do in an office or on a computer. And so I think we need to recognize the diversity of the jobs we do have in our state and try to cater training and education to meet that variety of needs. And I think in the process of doing this plan, we've learned a lot. One of the things that the University of Alaska did was to actually do an inventory of all the classes they have that are related in any way to the maritime industries. And I think they were surprised at the depth and breadth of the classes they were offering. I think that for a lot of us, we're still learning about what the regional training centers provide. I know I was in Nome in June and toured the NACTEC Center. I know that we've got a great center in Seward with AvTech. I know that up in Barrow, they have some great programs going on. And I think on the very local level with the high schools, that it's highly variable and is probably dependent on the particular philosophy of the local school board as to what degree, you know, they're pushing workforce development. But what we're recognizing to be a extremely high priority for us is a career awareness. And that can come from starting in elementary school up throughout our careers at any age. Sometimes we just don't understand how the skills we already have might be applied to other occupations, or skills that we might want to learn could be applied to many different occupations. And so I think it all kind of starts with career awareness and making people aware of the possibilities and the opportunities that abound in our state. And I think with, you know, the Arctic getting more and more attention, you know, that's a huge thing that's happening now, and it's going to continue to grow on the horizon. But what we're talking about are jobs that are available right now in the maritime industries, where we have a real shortage of skilled workers.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You kind of hit on the question I was going to have, too, is... Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I don't know process very well. I just wanted to tag on to the high school.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Julie Decker, for the record, through the chair. Thank you. This issue of the high schools and the variety within communities, I think, is really important. And then the statewide, how we approach it. There's a potential when we're working together on a statewide level to look at things like school policy. And the potential to do things with all the school counselors. In other words, if there's a way to steer the school counselors in what their agenda is. And the career awareness piece rolls into that. And a phrase that I like to use is blue collar, high dollar jobs. This is what we're really looking at. And sometimes I think there's a bias that those aren't really good jobs, but they really are good jobs, and they're high dollar jobs.
Thank you. Do you have any informational booths or anything like that at, say, Comfish or any of the Fish Expo presentations in order to get the word out? It's speaking from Kodiak. I know a lot of the young people go to Comfish, and they almost look forward to it. And I would think that would be an opportune time to get some of the word out. And I was just curious if you did that.
Representative Stutes, you know, the plan just came out in May, and so that was after Comfish 2014. And I think your suggestion is a really good one. I mean, we are addressing lots of different types of groups like Rotaries and Chamber of Commerce and school board gatherings and superintendent conferences to try to get the word out. We've been going on social media. We have a website established. We have links from Department of Labor and Workforce Development website, Fish and Game website, university. We're doing everything we can to get the word out, but we're always open to more suggestions, and I think you made a good one. Thank you.
Yeah, it occurs to me that I would think you would want to go where the young people are, and I'm thinking the Chamber of Commerce meeting, isn't it? But, you know, I mean, I would think you would want to target where, you know, at a high school outside of a basketball game, you know, put some information out there. I think you could really make some headway. Anyway, just a suggestion.
And if I might, represent students, I guess, you know, the reason why I mentioned the chamber is that it's also incumbent upon us to let employers know what's going on, because certainly not all the employers have been involved in this. So, you know, we want to make them aware so that they may be interested in establishing some internships or apprenticeship programs and things of that nature, so they can understand how they can become more involved so that they can find the skilled workers they need. So it's really about awareness for both the potential employee and the employers.
Sounds to me like it's a community awareness. And
absolutely.
Thank you. You can proceed with your presentation. Welcome. Have a seat. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Matt Allward. I'm with Homer Marine Trades Association, Vice President. So in Homer, Homer Marine Trades was about 70 members, group of marine trades businesses. And we were originally formed as an advertising collective to promote Homer as a place to do boat work and bring your vessels. But as our businesses started to grow, we quickly realized we had no workforce, local workforce to draw from. So workforce development and career awareness kind of became one of our missions too, which meshed great with working with this program and the Industry Advisory Committee. So the first thing we decided to do was take our limited funds and create a scholarship for not just high school, but any community member that was going to go to a vocational school, and with the plans of coming back to Homer with those skills. So we have a $1,000 scholarship that we've awarded twice, and this will be our third round, which we hope to expand. And then second was the career awareness side. So we got together with our shop teachers at Homer High and tried to figure out what we could do with the lack of funds. We knew we weren't going to just be able to go in there and make a new program, but in talking with them, they basically invited us to, we have this focus on learning period every Friday afternoon, so it's a 45-minute class, and we got six weeks in a row, so each Friday we go up there with a different trade business, and we go in and sit down with the kids and try to give them an honest view of what that trade involves, why you got interested and stayed in it, kind of entry-level pay expectations, and where you could go with skill development in the trade, what employers are looking for entry-level skills, that sort of thing. So we've had four of those so far, which we've had about 15 students, which is pretty good. We feel like a pretty good turnout. And we've had some pretty positive responses from that. So, and a lot of what we're trying to emphasize with the kids is things that they relate to, like how computer skills do relate to boat building and ship vessel maintenance and repair that you wouldn't think about, but with 3D modeling and CAD programs and stuff. And that kind of gets the kids' interest when they...
If I could interrupt you, what kind of businesses were at these four?
So the first one was kind of a general overview, but also one of the gentlemen who owns the one of the two boat yards in Homer and does a lot of boat hauling and boat painting and kind of that side of repair work and what his business involves. And he has local young guys who've got their CDLs and haul boats for him. And then we had a couple people who grew up, went through Homer High, graduated from Homer High, and have their own fishing businesses and kind of give a view of entry-level local fishing opportunities. We had one of our diesel engine repair guys come in. And he actually brought an engine in. We had it outside, and all the new engines are computer controlled. So he had his laptop inside, hooked up with a wire to the engine, and let the kids turn off cylinders and run diagnostic tests, and kind of show if you want to be a diesel mechanic, you have to have computer skills these days. And we had some of our local boat builders and repair guys, and they came in with the 3D modeling, which really got their attention. And then we have the electronics guy, and then net building and lines and riggings. Those were the first six that we kind of were starting with. So our hopes from these classes are to kind of get a good sense of what the kids actually might be interested in and how many, and kind of take that information, and we're going to try to come up with a plan to go to the school board and try to get permission to develop some more comprehensive programs that we'll get these kids actual skills that they could take to workplace or carry them on to a vocational school. So that will be phase two. And then the other program we got involved with is with the university at KPC, basically invited us to create a class for us, and we'll facilitate it for you. So what we started with is we have an eight classes, two-hour classes, one a week, that are fed two of them so far, which are basically all the different skills we felt anybody wanting to get into either fishing or marine transportation or any on-the-water job, just real basic skills we'd want them to have an idea about. And each of the eight classes has been sponsored by a different marine trade who's been responsible for the curriculum and for teaching the class.
If I may, what are some of the skills that you feel are required to get in the marine industry?
The first one was just to give them a real idea of what working on a boat is actually like, because it can be very romantic, but there are many parts of it that are not. And an understanding of legal relationships between vessel master and crew. And then some basic line and rigging skills, and safety was a big one, a real big one. And some engine skills, some hydraulic kind of and electrical and system skills. Those basic things.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Allred, a couple of questions. How was that? You said you were these classes that you had set up there in Homer. Were they part of a career class that was already in place, and that you were granted some slots in that career class? Is that how that worked, or was it some special thing that kids voluntarily came to?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it was a just focus on learning class is something that high schools had, and it's just a lot of times it's just a study hall, so it's kind of an open period for it. Any range of things, so they felt like this was an opportunity, a place that was already there in the schedule that we could come to. So we're basically trying to recreate, because back in the 80s there was actually some pretty good programs at the school that have since gone away. So.
And your eventual plan is to get kind of get some feedback from the students and then to implement an actual class or regular class within the schedule kind of thing. Is that what you're thinking?
That's the goal.
And would there be some significant equipment, technical kind of stuff that would need to be funded to get that class going?
It would depend on what we came up with. I mean, right now the high school has a rather large welding program, which is great, but they have to fund themselves through building trailers and auctioning them off, and they haven't got quite to where they are at in Wrangell yet, where we're actually got the high school working for industry, but that'd be a goal. But the mindset is to have, because we know we can't fund more teachers, is to get industry involved and get industry experts to be able to come into the class and teach the skills that they know.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Are you expecting or hoping that these will be credited courses?
Eventually. Right, and the college ones right now are two-hour classes, so they're obviously not credited. But we are also able to keep the cost down to $25 a class. And we've been promoting it to the whole community, including the high school, which the kids are invited to come to the classes. And at the classes we're doing in the high school, we've actually been giving out four $25 certificates. Kids put their names in a pot, just trying to encourage the kids to go to the college classes and take the next step.
And you said the high school classes, you have a participation of about 15 kids per class?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's great.
A lot of them are the kids who are already in the shop class and stuff, but it's hard to judge during the class because the kids but they're actually sitting there and paying attention, and they ask a few questions, not many, but the feedback we've got from the shop teachers afterwards is there's been a lot of buzz. The kids have been pretty excited. So we're hoping the school board could catch the buzz too.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Madam Chair, Representative, my name is Doug Ward, and I'm Director of Shipyard Development for now Vigor Alaska, which operates the Ketchikan Shipyard and the Seward Shipyard as of last July. I've been with the Ketchikan Shipyard since 1994, when Randy Johnson and I started Alaska Ship and Dry Dock to bring life back. The shipyard itself had been closed for several years and we got an operating agreement with DOT to bring it back to life in 1994. We had the unique and, it turns out, beneficial advantage of not knowing anything about the business before we started. And as it turns out, we did not, as a result of that, did not have a lot of the biases that are built into our U.S. shipbuilding industrial base, which has been uninterrupted for 250 years. So I'll quickly try and take this. I also chair the Governor's Workforce Investment Board. I've been on that board over 15 years. So workforce has been an important part, not only of our planning for the Ketchikan Shipyard, but and we've built that into our development plans. So I think in shipbuilding, there's a lot of what's called global benchmarking and comparison of best industrial practices to develop efficiencies and build vessels faster, better, cheaper. So early in the going, about 1995, I got involved with the National Shipbuilding Research Program, which was funded by the Navy to identify competitive weaknesses in the U.S. industrial base and then have shipbuilders make recommendations and come up with solutions to those competitive disadvantages. So one of the first things that I got involved in with that group was developing national skill standards for shipbuilding. That, and a common question from education is, what is it you need for us to teach? So now the shipbuilding industry has national skill standards that are based on production processes rather than occupations. And by focusing on production processes, it's possible to see those skills and key tasks that cut across all of the industrial processes. And when it gets to education, we can say that what we're asking you to teach cut across industry sectors as well. So the basic construction skills that go into building a ship or repairing a ship or a boat are essential to construction, to oil and gas. In fact, roughly 70% of the priority occupations that we as a state have targeted for oil and gas exist and reside within our shipyard in Ketchikan. So we're always looking for those cross-cutting capabilities of any initiatives that we undertake. And we also look for benchmarking to make sure that what we're doing is providing either competitive infrastructure or a competitive workforce. And we have a lot of information on how that works. So the what I want to get to here is what we are doing in Ketchikan based on a lot of these national standards. Before I turn to those examples, we now finally have a reauthorization of the 1998 Workforce Investment Act. That was the federal law providing federal training dollars to the Employment and Training Administration to the states. The 1998 Act was basically focused on the individual worker and how to get disadvantaged workers in, displaced workers, and pretty much focused on the individual person. The 2014 Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is the authorization, recognizes that the demand side of workforce must be addressed too. So one of the hallmarks of the new act is that it requires that economic developers or the investors in infrastructure must work together with workforce development. And so it pushes economic and workforce development together and requires that they be joined at the hip. That is going to be a sea state change for federal law and for federal investments. So a lot of what we're trying to do is lining up with the new Workforce Investment Act. It talks about performance-based apprenticeship, which is based on your ability to perform work rather than how long you've been in a position. So there's some significant changes to the federal act, which I believe is in alignment with global best practices for a competitive workforce. So what does that look like in Ketchikan, and what are we doing down there? I would say 3 years ago we were purchased by Vigor out of Portland and Seattle. We're now one of nine shipyards that exist within the Vigor umbrella. I think Alaska is a bit of an outlier. for them, but we are showing them that Alaska can be pretty innovative and can lead in our competitive practices. So what we've done down there is adopted the NCCR curriculum for construction trades, which in the state of Alaska is managed by the Alaska General Contractors, and they have the Alaska Construction Academy. They also administer all the testing and overview for NCCER curriculum on construction skills. At the NSRP, about 15 years ago, we recognized that those construction skills fundamentally are the same across all industries, so we recommended adoption of NCCR levels 1 through 2, with the junior level industrial processes being moved over onto the private sector for that more specialized training. So NCCR is affordable, it's standardized, it has a very high academic credentialing authority to it. Colleges and the University of Alaska acknowledges it, K through 12 acknowledges it, AvTech uses it. It's around the state in various places, but most importantly, it's affordable. About $40 gets you a textbook to get that you can use. So we have a standard curriculum platform on which to build for entry-level workers as well as our middle-skill and journey-level workers as they go on. In Ketchikan, our need right now, as you might know, we have the contract to build two new state ferries for the state of Alaska. Between that and the Seward Shipyard, we need about 150 new shipyard workers, and this is the process that we're following to get those new Alaskan workers into these jobs. So we're moving our entry-level skill workers that we have now, we're moving them into middle skills. The middle skills we're moving up into journey, and journey we're teaching leadership and supervision. And that's making way for new Alaskans to come into the job. And that's, in fact, just this week we're beginning to roll out the Construction Academy program, which we're calling the pre-apprentice program for marine industrial skills. And we have that both in the K-High and an adult program. And we're bringing young people into the shipyard to not only see what we're doing and become aware of the careers there, but to actually start learning how to do things. So we're looking forward to about 150 new young Alaskans joining our company here in the next 6 months to a year. The other partners that we have in this is the University of Alaska, and they've developed a maritime multi-skilled worker program, which is 12 weeks long. It's a cross-cutting course in itself. Priscilla Schulte is the director down there, and I've known her a long time. So they've developed this multi-skilled marine industrial course, 8 hours a day for 12 weeks. Completers are qualified to go to work for the Alaska Marine Highway System or other shipping companies as a deck engineer, which keeps the vessels operating. The modules within that course are about industrial processes, electronics, electrical, welding, fabrication. It also prepares people for careers in shipbuilding and repair. So Representative Ortiz, you asked about how the Alaska Workforce Investment Plan is dealing with distributing the career awareness as well as the learning the tools to learn this stuff. By adopting NCCR, because it does exist within state training institutions, one of my goals sometime in 2015 is to have one of our young workers get college credit from Milosavik and Barrow, since NCCR is a common curriculum. We also have interest from other CDQ groups in Western Alaska that rely on fishing vessels for Bristol Bay. And we're talking with them about six-month-long internships to have their people come down and learn vessel maintenance, repair, and building for replacement of the vessels in the Bristol Bay area. So I think the short answer to your question, Representative, is yes, it's what we're doing in Ketchikan is transferable across industry sectors. The knowledge, skills, ability to build a boat are needed to build almost anything. It's transferable across occupations, and it's transferable across both geographic and jurisdictional boundaries. So I'm confident that after 20 years of trying to figure out how to do this, and I would also add that workforce development and maritime are almost equally complex. So this sudden or recent growing awareness of Alaska's maritime industry is we've got the interest going. Now it's like a school of dolphins. How do you control them? Where are we going with all of this? And I think that's up to us in industry to help guide that. And I'm going to accept your invitation to come out to ComFish and make sure that your kids know what's going on out there.
I think that's wonderful. And I do have a question here. You said 2 to 3 years ago you were the Ketchikan shipyard was bought by Vector. Is that correct?
By Vigor Industrial.
Oh, Vigor, excuse me. And but it sounds as though the construction and the workforce is going to remain in Alaska. Is that correct? Or are they going to be constructing in Washington and Oregon and shipping to Alaska?
Very good question. Thank you for that. I would say the fact that we're building the two new state ferries in Ketchikan is an indication of Vigor Industrial's commitment to the state. In order to get that contract, we had to, our pricing had to equal or be better than Gulf of Mexico pricing for building new ships. And there's roughly a 25 to 30% cost disadvantage to do work in Alaska to the Gulf of Mexico for a whole host of reasons. So we've taken that contract at $101 million, which started out to build a single boat. Now we're building two for the same price. It's an indication that Vigor is in Alaska to stay. So they purposely took that contract to provide 4 years of stability so that we can get these kind of workforce development programs not only demonstrated but proven and then begin distributing this around the state.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Look, any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please do. Please identify yourself.
Chris Norris again. Chairman Stutes and Representative Ortiz, I guess you've heard a lot today, and I guess I want to just point out that we certainly understand we have a lot of things that we need to continue to do to fully implement this. Industry continues to meet regularly. We're continuing to get the word out. We're meeting with some of the new members of the administration to make them aware of this workforce plan. We would certainly like to encourage anything you can do as legislators to help the agencies work with us in alignment and a collaborative way to make sure that this plan gets implemented. We recognize that with dwindling state dollars that we need to be able to do more with less. It certainly would behoove the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Department of Transportation Marine Highway System. We know they need workers because of the graying of their workforce, just like ours. We know that it's within the mission of Department of Labor and Workforce Development with Commerce, Department of Education, the University of Alaska to work on workforce development. So anything you can do to encourage them, whether it be through a resolution or discussions, to encourage them to work with all the industries that have workforce development plans, we would really appreciate that. And we would also ask that you consider retaining the educational tax credit. It's been an excellent tool for industry to use to further invest in workforce development and training. So we really thank you for the opportunity to present our plan to you today.
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you all for taking time. Yes, Representative
Ortiz. Yeah, a couple of questions. One more of a suggestion, I guess. Along the lines of Chairperson Stu's recommendation that you go to ComFair, there's also, at least in the district that I'm from, and I think in most school districts, there's a career class that is a part of I think it's a requirement still to take careers. And the idea is that they, you know, they learn about potential careers and they do some skills like resume building and things like that. But I think, you know, it would be a natural place for you to connect with the school officials and say, hey, we're interested in doing a presentation in your careers classes if you have them available. And I think there'd be an openness to make that happen. I know being a former teacher, we're always willing to have people come in and give some more expert and real-life, you know, experience to what you're trying to do. So anyway, that's just something to think about. Doug, you talked about getting young people to the shipyard. How does that work? How does that actually work in a practical sense? Because I know, again, being a former teacher, you're dealing with kids' schedules and you're dealing with the classroom schedules and all that. How does that work? Who are you drawing down to the shipyard, and how is that done during an actual given work day?
Well, I've got a couple of good examples. Basically, we're working very closely with the school counselors, Bob and Chloe, you know, with the career and technical education instructors, so they're aware of what we're looking for. And they are looking for students that may not be college-bound, may not know what they're doing yet, and they're actually encouraging them to come down and see what we're doing. A good example of that is young Kyla Del Rosario, who she's put this on the statewide public radio. She's a great example. She started high school and didn't really know what she was doing or why she was there. Maybe got in a little trouble, but took a welding class, and her welding instructor called me up and said, there's a young gal that's a natural. Can we bring her down? She came down. She spent about 6 months with us last spring. By the way, she's supporting herself. She's moved out of a difficult domestic situation. She is a very driven young woman now. She wants a career in the Ketchikan shipyard, and she had her graduation picture taken in front of down at the shipyard. So she is a great spokesman for our industry. She's a great spokesman for young Alaskans entering the workforce. And one day she'll hopefully be leading our company, because I think she's got the kind of drive and intelligence it takes to do that. So we work pretty hard with reaching out to the individual teachers, looking for individual students, and then trying to celebrate those success stories, people like Kayla, and make sure that that gets spread around.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No, that's it.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time that you took to come here and enlighten us all, and hopefully we'll see you at Comfish in Kodiak, which is in March? April. April 4th, 5th, and 6th, I think it is. Anyway, please, and you can contact the Chamber of Commerce in Kodiak, and they can give you all the information you could ever want on Comfish.
You bet.
So,
thank you very much, Representative.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Thank you. We will be meeting again on Thursday, February 19th, in this room at 10 a.m. The committee will be hearing House Bill 103, Boards of Fish and Game Regulatory Authority. And seeing no other business, we will adjourn at 10:59.